Good morning, Cowboys Nation, and welcome to another episode of the Writer's Block Podcast. I am your host, David Howman, joined as always by my co-host, Brandon Clemens. And we're coming to you this Wednesday morning with our first episode of the Brian Schottenheimer era. Of course, last time that we were talking with you guys, Shoddy had just come in for his first interview, and then later in the day after the episode released, he comes in for his second interview back-to-back. And speculation was running afoot. And then we had like a 11th hour moment of, oh, they've talked to Rich Bisaccia, they've talked to Pete Carroll, what does it all mean? And then Friday evening at, I think it was like almost 6 p.m. Central Time is when they put out the official announcement that they have named Brian Schottenheimer their head coach. So like the most Friday news dump of all Friday news dumps for Brian Schottenheimer being elevated to head coach, one of four coaches that they interviewed. And then we had all weekend to speculate about what a Brian Schottenheimer Cowboys era will look like. Monday morning, we got our introductory press conference with Shoddy. And now we already have some staff announcements. He's been started filling out his coaching staff and made some hires. And we're going to be talking about all of that and more with the Cowboys coming up on this episode. But Brandon, how are you doing? What are your initial reactions? What was your reaction Friday night when it officially became real that, yes, they are promoting the offensive coordinator that hasn't called plays for the Cowboys?
Honestly, I was pretty excited. I mean, I know that's like I think I was more excited because I just wanted everything to be done at that point. Like, I just, okay, let's get the head coach in here and like, we just got to get this done. Like we were talking last week with our friend Jess, and I'm like, I just want this done. Like, I'm just sick of this whole like posturing. Let's get the head coach going. Let's start building the staff. And since we've recorded a lot of moving parts, like you just mentioned, like what you just teed up. So yeah, I was excited just for the fact that we have a head coach, and obviously like, you know, there's mixed emotions there because it's not like a Pete Carroll, you know. Cowboys Nation was like, oh, well, what like they're freaking out about, like they're going with a guy who wasn't really calling plays and this and that. And it's like, and I'm like, to me, you know, it's not always about the things that you see in the front. It's sometimes it's the stuff behind the scenes, which, mm-hmm. And we got a peek behind the curtain of Brian Schottenheimer, you know, at the press conference this past week. And any doubts that I had, cause I, you know, you have doubts because why has this guy been an assistant, you know, assistant head coach or assistant coach, position coach? Why has he been doing this for 25 plus years and he hasn't gotten a real shot at a head coaching job? So like, I was kind of like, okay, so what's the deal here? And then by Monday, I'm like, and I listened to that press conference, which was like an hour and a half or whatever it was. I'm like, yeah, I'm good with it. Like, you know what? You got to take swings, and I'll give the Joneses credit for that one. I mean, I don't give the Joneses a lot of credit, you know, especially in recent years, but they're swinging for the fences. They're going for it with this one. And he has the lineage, like, you know, he's what, you know, what is he, 50 years old, give or take? I don't know his exact date of birth, but he's in that range. He's like in his early 50s, if I'm not mistaken. He's been in football his entire life. Like, his father was the late, great Marty Schottenheimer, a coach that I had a lot of love and respect, you know, for. You know, he's one of those coaches as a kid, like you see him on the sideline with those glasses and the hat and everything, like, and he had like those cool hoodies back in the day, like those starter jackets back in the day.
Yeah,
like
the starter jackets. Oh, yeah, man, those were great.
Yeah, those were, he looked great. I mean, and Marty was respected. Like, I'm, you know, coming from an era where when I grew up, it was like the Cowboys were so good at the running game, and Marty was, that was like a trademark for him. Like, he was such a great run game coach. But he also, like, was just a great, you know, from everything I saw, interviews, everything, like, how can you not like that guy? You know, and he won 200 wins in the regular season for his career. So, obviously, you don't get to 200 wins if you're not a decent coach, because a lot of coaches don't make it that far. They, you know, like, yeah. You know, some coaches, they get one shot, they don't do it, they don't do well, and guess what? They're back to being a coordinator. So, you know, going back to Brian, it was, you know, just knowing the family history, like, he's in the family business. He also coaches Syracuse for a hot second, so that's always a plus. But just listening to him talk, like, just, you know, I'm watching that press conference Monday, and, like, just, like, he was answering the questions so well. And, you know, it wasn't, like, to me, like there wasn't a script, and you know, he was pulling at the heartstrings a little bit, you know, talking about his dad, and I mean, who could blame him? I mean, his dad was his best friend. I mean, anybody, and you know myself, it's like, you know, my dad and I are like this, you know, we're thick as thieves. And you know, you when you have these great moments, you want to give your dad a hug, so to speak. And it's like, that kind of got me, you know, I'm not gonna lie. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, woof. I was like, I just got punched in the gut. That one hit me a little bit. And you know, just him talking X's and O's and just talking about what he wants to do. He wants to keep the continuity of the program, but also shake things up. So it's like, you're still gonna have familiarity, but they're gonna tweak some things, which I think, excuse me, which I think is a good thing, because when you bring in a whole new coaching staff, that whole thing's gotta get changed. In this case, there's a lot of good pieces there. There's a lot of, you know, good players. And I don't think there's going to be enough tweaks where it's going to make us better, but it's not going to be a wholesale change. And, you know, overall, I'm excited.
Yeah, I think the reaction Friday night was very, very different from the reaction Monday afternoon after that press conference. Because,
yeah.
I mean, you talk about winning the press conference. Brian Schottenheimer did it. Jerry and Steven, not so much, but I think a lot of the feelings that we were all feeling Friday night really more than anything has to do with the process, right? They didn't make a decision on Mike McCarthy until after they'd already missed their window to interview other candidates like Ben Johnson, like Aaron Glenn. And we've already talked on here before about, I don't think that those guys were taking the interview, let alone even being real candidates. But at the very least, like you want a coaching search that reflects that you're trying, that you're going after, you know, real, you know, top-notch candidates. And in fairness, I mean, they interviewed Kellen Moore, who has a lot of history with the organization, has done well throughout his career, has had interviews elsewhere. They also interviewed Robert Saleh, the former Jets head coach, who was very much in the mix for the Jaguars job, also interviewed for the Raiders, interviewed, I think, for one other team. Leslie Frazier, who hadn't interviewed anywhere else for head coaching jobs this cycle, but the previous few cycles he had. None of those guys really, there was like initial buzz around Kellen Moore, but then it came out, you know, shortly after his interview that it was a very short interview. They did not take the full time allotted for that interview to talk with each other. So it doesn't seem like there was a whole lot of interest there. It's unclear on, you know, which side didn't have interest for who and whatnot. But it seemed like this was just a search where he was caught flat-footed, had no idea what he was going to do once Mike McCarthy decided he was going to part ways. And that's annoying. That's really frustrating because he set himself up in this situation by not extending Mike McCarthy or firing him at the end of last season. And then we had all year long, right? He's a lame duck coach the entire time. Every single game, win or lose, was a referendum on Mike McCarthy's tenure. When they won, it was, all right, they can keep Mike McCarthy now. When they lost, all right, who are they going to hire now? And, like, I mean, that's the toll that takes on your locker room, let alone the fan base. I don't think Jerry gave any thought to that. And to, you know, let him go and not really let him go. From all accounts, it sounds like Mike McCarthy was the one who said, you know what, I'm over this. I'm walking.
Can't blame him.
Can't blame him at all. And then Jerry to then turn around and say, all right, we're just now his offensive coordinator who didn't call plays, who, as you said, has been coaching for 25 years and never gotten a head coaching job. We're going to make him the head coach. Didn't interview for any other head coaching jobs. I don't think he's interviewed for a head coaching job since he was the Seahawks offensive coordinator back in 2020. And of course he didn't get a job then. So I understand why people were upset with it. But again, then you sit down and you look at Brian Schottenheimer, you look at his record, the fact that he, like you said, he lives and breathes football. He's been around it his entire life. Not only has he been around it his entire life, he's been around winning football. You mentioned Marty Schottenheimer, 200 career wins, one of just seven coaches out there with 200 regular season wins to their name as a coach. The only coach out there with 200 wins and no Super Bowl, by the way, which, of course, that's, you know, that's the main black mark on Marty Schottenheimer's tenure is he won so many games and he was so good for such a long time, but he couldn't win a Super Bowl. I don't think that I don't think that really means that you're not still a great coach. Everybody who knew him said he was a great coach. It's just, I think it shows how hard it is to win a Super Bowl.
Well, think of this
relevant information for Cowboys fans.
I mean, think of it like this. Dan Marino was one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Yeah. Never won a Super Bowl. I mean, it's, you know, I know it's player coach, but the point is you're great at your job and you don't win the ultimate prize, you know, at your job. Doesn't make you any less of a talent. So, I mean, Marty Schottenheimer, to your point, he was, you know, he was one of the great coaches, you know, for me, like me growing up, like, you know, I grew up in the '90s and in the 2000s and, you know, just watching his teams like Chiefs, Chargers. I mean, like it was, like he just ran a great organization. Like they were very competitive teams. You don't, you know, you don't win as many games as he did by being a lousy coach, because lousy coaches don't last in the league. It's just as simple as that.
Right.
And let me just say this too. Like you mentioned, like that's the one thing that's like the you know, that didn't check, the box didn't get checked for Marty. Let's all hope and pray that we get something with Brian, because the Schottenheimer family is one of those families and one of those football families. And I would love to see, I would love that moment where not only does, you know, Brian win that, you know, the Lombardi trophy, but he gets to hand it to his mom like that.
Yeah.
That would, you know, just thinking about that, you get a kind of like a little bit of that gut punch. And it's like not only that because of the family and everything, but like for us as Cowboys fans, like, you know, I was a very young kid the last time, you know, the Cowboys won a Super Bowl. And there, I know there's a lot of people out there that cover the team that they haven't seen anything. You know what I mean? They weren't even born yet. Like it's been that long. And you know what? Like I'm gonna give Brian Schottenheimer the leash, because you know what? To me, he's a football guy. And so what? He hasn't, you know, been a head coach before. So what? You know, and here's the thing. And I always turn it back to my beloved Syracuse Orange. I know it was only one season this year, but Fran Brown was never a head coach anywhere. And he put Syracuse football back on the map. I get it. It's college versus pros. But the point is, it doesn't matter where you get these coaches. If you're a football guy and you know how to get your, you know how to get the best out of your players, the sky's the limit.
Well, Syracuse probably spent more in NIL money than Stephen Jones will ever spend in free agency money. So that right there nixes out the comparison there.
Nice.
But no, I mean, to your point though, yeah. Like, I mean, you gotta be a head coach at some point. You gotta get your start somewhere, right?
Yeah.
So for me, it never really moved me saying, oh, he's never been a head coach before. And then when we got to that introductory press conference on Monday, like you said, talking about his family in the beginning, I mean, I was tearing up. I was looking around. I'm like, who's cutting onions over here? Like he starts talking about, first he talks about like his wife and how much she's supported him through all of this and his kids. And, you know, he's getting choked up and I'm starting to feel a lump in my throat. And then he starts talking about his mom, and it shows her in the crowd. And, you know, knowing the history with Marty and, you know, how he passed away a few years ago and all the details around that, that hit a little bit. And then he says, you know, he starts talking about his dad, and he's saying, you know, when I think it was Jerry who told the story about when they decided that Brian was going to be the head coach, he called up his mom right there and said, like, I'm going to get a chance to do the one thing that dad never did, win a Super Bowl. And he was doing he did an interview after the press conference with Nick Eatman of the Dallas Cowboys team site, where he's like, obviously we're trying to win a championship just because that's the objective of doing this thing. But at the same time, like, if I can do it, if I can do that as a head coach, I can do that in a way to honor my father. So, I mean, right there, you see, like that's, you see how he got the job in the interview. Like, this is an easy guy to root for, easy guy to fall in love with.
I mean, he absolutely crushed it.
There were multiple players who showed up to this press conference. Yeah. Dak Prescott being one of them. I saw Jalen Tolbert, Tyler Smith, several other guys.
Yeah, I saw Brock Hoffman there too.
Yeah, there was a solid contingent of players, and I mean, and Schottenheimer even said, like, in his interview afterward with Nick Eatman, he was like, I knew my parents were going to be there. Like, I knew my family was going to be there. I was prepared for that. I didn't know that the players were going to be there. And that part got to me, like the emotion of, hey, these guys took time out of their day. And keep in mind, a lot of these guys around this time, you know, they take off for vacation or go to do, you know, off-season training, you know, with their personal trainers or whatever. These guys took time out of their day to come into the facility and show their support by being there for their new head coach, who they already obviously know from his last 3 years here in Dallas. So, I mean, it's very, very easy to see the appeal of him as a person, as a leader. He very clearly already has the respect of these guys, which is a big part of it.
Yeah.
And one thing that like bothered me in the discourse talking about Brian Schottenheimer was I saw a lot of people saying like, oh, this is just a nepotism hire. And let's be very clear. Schottenheimer's first few NFL coaching jobs were all on his dad's staff. So like in that respect, absolutely. I think Brian would probably agree. The fact that his father was a legendary coach did help him start his career. But at the same time, if this was a nepotism hire, Brian Schottenheimer would have been a head coach 15 years ago. Like if he was wholly getting hired because of his last name, he would have been a head coach 15 years ago. We wouldn't be having this conversation about, well, why did it take him 25 years to get a head coaching job? Like he would have had this after 1 year of being the offensive coordinator for the Jets back in 06. Yeah. So, you know, to me that holds no water with me saying that it's a nepotism hire, because I mean, again, he's certainly, you know, gotten his foot into some doors because of what his name is, but he's also earned everything that he's gotten up to this point. Like he has put in the work. He has worked tirelessly. Everybody who has anything to say about him says, you know, his work ethic is none other. And so I'm excited to see what his tenure is going to look like. And they also revealed that he's going to be calling offensive plays, which of course he hasn't called plays since the 2020 season. He did that for 3 years under Pete Carroll with the Seahawks. And he talked about Pete Carroll a few times in the press conference too, talking about the influence that Pete Carroll had on him and how much he grew and developed from his time working with Pete Carroll. Are you excited to see him calling the plays on offense? Are you worried about that since he hasn't? I mean, it you can say it's only 2020, but also you think about how much has changed since 2020. I mean, the 2020 season, you know, we didn't know who Ben Johnson was. Like, we didn't know. I don't even think my timing might be off here, but I don't even think Caleb Williams was like a star at OU yet by that point. Like he, you know, so much of what we're talking about now in the NFL at large, you know, it was, I mean, that was CeeDee Lamb's rookie year. Like it's been a while.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah. I mean, thank God 2020 is, you know, has been as far away as it is. I don't even want to think about 2020 for other obvious reasons, but no, for me, like, what he mentioned in the press conference too is he wants to bring some of that old school approach back too. Like I, cause that's the thing too. Like everybody's wants to be the next like innovator of a certain offense. Like I know everybody wants to follow the McVays and the Shanahans of the world, but sometimes you can do what Marty Schottenheimer did and keep it simple. And, you know, I'm not saying he's not going to be complex and, you know, do motions and things like that. Obviously that's going to be the case. Cause he mentioned it, but he's going to have a little bit of old school approach. So regardless of if it's been 2020 to 2025, which is 5 years, that doesn't bother me because old school football still works. And for me personally, you know, I know he's a very proponent, just like his late father was, you know, the running game is going to be a big thing. And I think that's going to feed off of, and he even said it, like, you know, they're going to have, you know, they want, the plan is to run the ball well and then play action, you know, off the run. Mm-hmm. Like you want to establish the running game and then do some play action, let Dak go to work and start picking apart defenses from a passing perspective. And to that point kind of gets me juiced up for the draft because I want a running back. And I think Schottenheimer's going to get himself a running back in this coming draft. I don't know if it's going to be a pick 12 because there are a few, you know, there's a particular name that everybody, you know, really wants out there. Ashton Jeanty, I mean, great player. I know you like Cam Scadaboo. I know that's your guy. You know, LaQuinn Allen, you know, lesser known name, you know, to the national public, but hell of a running back. But the point is, I think Shoddy's going to get himself a running back. I wouldn't be surprised, honestly. I would say day two, early day three, you know, for the draft. I know we're a ways away from that, but that's the excitement for me because we didn't get to see a full complement of quality work from the running game until it was too late because we were stuck with like a Zeke situation, which obviously the whole thing with Zeke, it didn't work out. You know, he's not the same player. And they took forever to let Rico just be Rico. Mm-hmm. So it was one of those things where I'm like, excuse me, this cough is still getting me from the, you know, flu a few weeks ago. So sorry for the cough, guys. But no, I don't see Rico coming back. So I feel like this running back room is going to be revamped, which I'm excited for, because, you know, I think Schottenheimer's going to bring this extra oomph to the running game that we haven't seen in a while. I feel like we're going to run the ball more than we did in previous years. I just had this weird feeling we're going to have more of a run based focus. So I'm excited to see how he implements that, but also getting us some players. Now, the issue I have, though, is Jerry and Steven going to let him have any input, or are we going to be taking like a Johnny Manziel instead of Zach Martin kind of a thing? Like, I hope that doesn't happen. Like, I don't want anything bad on draft night. Like, I hope he has enough input where he can say, that's the type of running back I want in my offense.
Right. Well, and it's interesting, because on Tuesday there was at the Senior Bowl, Will McClay spoke for the first time since all of this happened, since the season ended, really. And he even mentioned how he was actually part of the head coaching interview process, and that he was very fired up to work with Brian Schottenheimer, and that his focus is on getting guys through the draft that fit what Schottenheimer wants to do. So, I mean, obviously Will McClay he doesn't have the final say, but he's generally, I mean, you mentioned, you know, Johnny Manziel and Zach Martin. I mean, he was one of the driving factors in picking Martin over Johnny Manziel. So he's had a lot of sway in draft decisions, and it sounds like he's, you know, very much interested in taking input from Shoddy. And to your point, too, about Shoddy talking about play action, I pulled up these stats for an article I did at Blogging the Boys, where the 3 years where he was the Seahawks offensive coordinator. Now, granted, his run-pass ratios in Seattle during that time varied very drastically. His first year, they were like super run heavy. I think they were the most run heavy team in the entire NFL.
I think.
Right. And then the next year, it was like pretty close to a 50-50 split between run and pass. And then 2020, that was when the whole let Russ cook thing happened, and Shoddy kind of leaned into it and they became a lot more pass happy. But consistently, all 3 years, each of those 3 years, they were top 10 in play action rate. Meaning like they use play action a lot, and they used it consistently, whether they were running the ball a lot, whether they were passing the ball a lot. So that's a big part of his offense. He also, to your point, you know, talking about he's going to be old school in some of his approaches, but he is going to incorporate that fun stuff. He said this exact quote: I'm a big believer in cut splits. I'm a big believer in shifts and motions to distort things.
Yep.
We're going to do a great job of marrying our runs and our passes and make those look the same. I'm proud to say that two different times in my career as a coordinator, we led the league in rushing, and they go hand in hand. The running game and the play action game go hand in hand. So, I mean, that sounds a lot like kind of the MO of Sean McVay, of Kyle Shanahan. Like, neither of those guys are necessarily run heavy, run first kind of guys, but they have always had a strong run game. And to the point where when Matthew Stafford, when Brock Purdy turns around and they start reaching the ball out towards that running back, those linebackers suck down towards the line of scrimmage. So then when he pulls it and he does the play action, he's got tons of free space, you know, in that second level. The receivers just fly in there and they get wide open catches, and then they're set up for yards after the catch. And so, it sounds like that's very similar to the MO that Brian Schottenheimer is going to come in with, which if he actually does that, because Kellen Moore said he wanted to do stuff like that and it didn't quite work out. Mike McCarthy said he wanted to do stuff like that and it didn't quite work out. So if Brian Schottenheimer actually does that, is going to be what Cowboys fans have wanted for a very long time.
Plus, Dak Prescott's I know he's had the injuries and stuff, but Dak can still move pretty well. So, like, even if he can't find somebody open for some reason, at the second level, he could still scramble and get 5-6 yards or whatever and keep moving and keep ahead of the chain, so to speak. Like, that's the other part of the game, too. Like, I'm not expecting Dak to run a ton, But that option's going to be there where if Dak doesn't like what he's got out, you know, out there in the middle of the field, he might just take off and run for 5-6 yards and just keep yourself ahead of the chains. Because, you know, if Shoddy does want to really focus more on the run, you know, 5-6 yards on a play like that, that's going to keep you ahead of the chains, and you can still nickel and dime, and then, let the run set it up, and then have a hard play action. The defense goes real hard at the run fake. Dak rolls out and he hits CD for 60 yards. You know, it's like, that's going to be a beautiful thing when we see that.
Well, and the other thing too, with his offenses in Seattle, I mean, they took shots down the field too. Like he loves taking shots down the field. He was the offensive coordinator there for the first couple of years of DK Metcalf's career. And I mean, at that point, like DK was still a little raw as a rookie, but they knew one thing. They were like, hey, this guy's big, physical, fast. We're going to throw him a lot of go balls. And that's exactly what he did. And he also had Tyler Lockett, who is pretty darn good at getting open. And he got a lot of those too. And, you know, Russell Wilson, say what you will about Russ. He's very good when he's taking those shots deep. That was a big part of his success this past year in Pittsburgh. Was like they built the entire offense out of, you know, moon balls to George Pickens, and half the time it worked.
He throws a great moon ball. I mean, regardless of what you think of Russ right now, it is, you know, I know he's not the same Russ that he was in Seattle, but that moon ball is still there.
Yeah. And Dak has been pretty darn good throwing deep shots too. When he has guys to throw to,
that's
the second question, is who does he throw to? But those are, you know, we got plenty of time to figure that out. As far as figuring other things out though, Brian Schottenheimer has been quick to fill out some of his staff. Whispers came up over the weekend, and then on Tuesday it was made official. He hired Matt Eberflus as his defensive coordinator, Nick Sorensen as his special teams coordinator. Of course, Matt Eberflus is a name that's familiar to a lot of Cowboys fans. He was the linebackers coach for I think 7 seasons, first under Rob Ryan, and then stuck around when Monty Kiffin and Rod Marinelli took over. He left in 2018 for the Colts defensive coordinator job, and very much kept the bones of that Rod Marinelli Tampa 2 defense. Was very successful in Indianapolis, parlayed it into the Bears head coaching job, was not very successful in Chicago. But when you look at his defensively, they were pretty good. He called the plays for the last 2 seasons until he got fired midway through the year this past season. And when he was calling plays, statistically, the Bears were a top 10 defense both years. So he's still got the juice as a defensive coordinator. And also, he will not be in charge of calling timeouts in Dallas. So
yes.
I mean, he didn't call timeouts in Chicago either, but he won't be tasked with that in Dallas. So that's a nice reunion there. And then for Nick Sorensen, he's a more interesting case because he coached alongside Schottenheimer in Seattle. He was an assistant special teams coach, and then he moved to coaching linebackers. And then at one point he was on the Jacksonville Jaguars staff coaching special teams when Brian Schottenheimer was there under that one horrible year with Urban Meyer as head coach. And then last couple of years he's been in San Francisco coaching linebackers. This last year he was named their defensive coordinator. Defense did not work out well. And they ended up firing him after this year. There was buzz that they wanted to keep Sorensen on as their special teams coordinator. That obviously did not happen. Now he's in Dallas as their special teams coordinator. Initial reactions from you, Brandon, on Sorensen, and obviously Eberflus is the bigger name and one that Cowboys fans are very familiar with.
Yeah, I'll start with Sorensen. I'll start with the latter there. I mean, Nick was a player for many years. I mean, he played from the early 2000s up to like 2010 or, you know, somewhere in there. I remember him being a kind of a special teams ace. Like that's where he made his money like that. I mean, I don't think he was ever like a real like starter in the NFL. If I remember correctly, he was more of a special teams ace where he played for the then St. Louis Rams, he played for Jacksonville, and he also finished up in Cleveland. I remember the name because you watch special teams. I mean, there's three layers of the game, and he was, you know, to me, he was some teams, in a way, like they're C.J. Goodwin. So, like, you know, he was a really good special teams guy. So it doesn't surprise me that, you know, after all these years, like, you know, he's worked his way up as a coach, and now he's, you know, he's going to circle back to the special teams coaching role after being a defensive coordinator. So that one was interesting because I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I didn't, you know, that really bad year with the Jags. I mean, I don't know how much you want to take that as a grain of salt, but I mean, it wasn't like the special teams was that great when he was there. But let's be honest, I'm going to throw it away because it was an Urban Meyer team.
Yeah, everything was bad in Urban Meyer's 1 year, not even a full year in Jacksonville. So I can't fault him one bit for that
No,
1 year.
and I think he's a respected coach in the league. Plus, let's be honest here, you know, he does have that San Francisco 49ers tie, which, you know, the Cowboys haven't really been doing too well against those Niners lately. So if you can get a little extra insight on how things are working over there in Santa Clara, California, that would definitely be helpful. So, you know, there's a couple multiple layers to it, but I think just him being a special teams, you know, player in the NFL, I think those are the best kind of guys to have as a coach. So I think he'll be fine. I think we'll see some work there. I'm not gonna lie to you, like, there was rumblings. I don't know how far they really got because it's the rumor mill, and you don't know how far it really goes. You know, Dan Bailey was being thrown out there at one point. I mean, you know, obviously I love Dan Bailey. I wouldn't mind because if I'm not mistaken, you could correct me on this. As of recording, you know, because Bones took his assistant special teams coach with him to the Titans. So I think we still need an assistant special teams coach. So I mean, maybe we could get a guy like Dan Bailey in here. And I'm not saying that's definitely happened or anything like that, but like the point is, we still have some holes to fill along that staff. It's you know, assistant special teams coach. So I'm waiting to see what happens there. Now, flipping over to Eberflus, it's different than Zim. It's a different style. Like
Very
you're not gonna
different.
see the double mug. Like you're not gonna see that. Like that's like Matt Eberflus is not really a blitzing kind of coach. Like he just likes to. He's like he reminds me of. I don't know if you. I'm sure you've seen the movie because it's one of the best football movies of all time. You know, Remember the Titans, and from that one perspective, when Denzel's playing Coach Boone, he keeps the playbook simple, and that's what Eberflus is doing. Like you keep it simple, and you just let guys be natural, let them just attack. And I know he has this acronym. I can't think of it off the top of my head. I know you probably know it because I know you know it. I'm sure you do. But and I know he's a
Well, I
very
got it ready to
very.
go.
Of course you do. I'm not surprised that you do. But Matt Eberflus to me, it's different. It's a bend but don't break kind of defense. Is it? It's you know. It's you're not gonna. You know. And the thing I've noticed about him, which leads me to like Jordan Lewis, for example. Man, wouldn't you love seeing him go on a slot corner blitz? I think that would be very interesting. So Cowboys fans are gonna have to get used to the style difference because it's you know it's to me it's you know watching him coach, it reminds me of. And I'm not trying to compare it to those great Buccaneers defenses of yesteryear, but it's got a lot of that cover two style to it. It's got the cover four, like it's got those type of principles that we've seen from you know Monty Kiffin I can't. Oh my God, I'm drawing a blank right now. Who was our previous defensive coordinator that he worked
Rod
under?
Marinelli.
Marinelli. Thank you. I don't know why I was drawing a blank there. Shout out to Rod Marinelli. Rod Marinelli is the guy. But Eberflus to me, like, just he's evolved too. Like I know he had a bad, you know, he had a bad stint as the coach of the Bears, but he also is not stuck in that cover two dead set. Like he can he mixes it up. He kind of, you know, there's been some subtle changes in the way he coaches. So don't be af he won't be afraid to change things up because, you know, I know he's more of a conservative coach. But I wouldn't be surprised if we see more blitzing than we're used to because of a guy like Micah Parsons, you know, and I also would say, you know, Jordan Lewis, you would love to have him back at slot. But I'm also wondering, what are we going to do at that three technique? Because I'm curious about that. And then also, he likes to run nickel. I love the nickel defense. That's something I personally like. All you need is two linebackers. You got your Mike and your Will. I'm good. So I'm curious to see how that's going to play. And I really wish DeMarvin Overshown wasn't injured because that would be a lot of fun to watch. But Maris Leofau, I think that's going to be fun in an Eberflus system. Hopefully, Eberflus sticks around. I mean, let's be honest, he might have a really good year next year and be gone again. But my hope is he's here for a little bit. He gets to work with the guy like DeMarvin Overshown, and you know, we can have a really good defense for years to come. I think this is a good hire. I think it's also good too to have former head coaches on a staff as a, you know, as coordinators, because let's be honest, Schottenheimer has been a head coach. So he can actually pick the brains of these former head coaches like a Matt Eberflus. You know, and we don't know who the offensive coordinator is going to be, which I know we'll get into that in a little bit, but there's some names out there that have been head coaches. So I wouldn't mind seeing him have an offensive coordinator that was a previous head coach, because I think having some extra head coaching experience with what Shoddy brings to the table, I really think would make for a damn good coaching staff.
Yeah. Well, and to your point too, he can ask Matt Eberflus, like, hey, what would you do as head coach? And yeah, then do the exact opposite.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just don't ask him about timeouts, because we don't go by timeout.
But no, to your point though, I mean, Eberflus, he knows defense, and there are lots of guys, you know, the NFL is littered with guys who are great coordinators, not necessarily cut out to be a head coach. I'm not saying that Matt Eberflus cannot be successful in a second stint as a head coach, but he very clearly is a far better defensive coordinator than he is a head coach. And you really hit the nail on the head with his scheme too. This is a bend but don't break philosophy. He keeps things simple. His priority, because Mike Zimmer is a guy who, he's going to confuse the opposing quarterback. He's going to get in that double mug front. He's going to show, you know, blitzes from the outside, blitzes from the inside. He's going to show single high, and he's going to rotate to middle of the field open look. He's going to blitz the guys that you didn't think were blitzing, and he's going to drop the guys back in covers that you thought were blitzing. And it is a complex scheme, and we saw that this year. First few games, they were terrible. Injuries didn't help there, but then towards the end of the season, guys started getting it, and the defense was, you know, it was elite over the last month or so. And but that's the difference, is Mike Zimmer is a complex scheme that when it works and everybody's on the same page, it's unreal. Matt Eberflus, on the other hand, he doesn't blitz a lot. He doesn't even like do simulated pressures. He's not going to bring those guys mugging up into the A gaps. He's not even going to disguise his coverages all that much. I mean, he does a little bit here and there, but not to the degree that Zimmer did.
Yeah.
You know what you're going to get, but it allows his defensive players to not do any thinking. All they have to do is just react. And he's had a lot of success with that. And he's had, I mean, some great players that kind of came out of nowhere. In Indy, his safeties were Julian Blackman and Kerry Willis out of Michigan State, neither of whom were high draft picks, neither of whom were like on anyone's radar. Guy by the name of Shaq Leonard turned into an all-pro under him. He was, I think, a third or fourth round pick. And by the way, he has a very similar body type to Tremaine Edmonds, who was a star linebacker for the Bears under Eberflus, who also has a very similar body type to one Maris Liafau. So I think there's a very natural fit for Liafau in this defense. I also think DeMarvion Overshown, when he's healthy, is a very natural fit because of the coverage requirements of that Mike linebacker in this defense. It's just a matter of when Overshown is healthy. And like you mentioned, the three technique, that is the single most important position on this defense for Matt Eberflus. We remember Rod Marinelli always talked about, we got to have a great three tech. They never really had a great three tech when Rod Marinelli was running the defense. In Dallas, they briefly had David Irving, but you know, he had his own issues that kept him off the field quite often. And to me, I'm looking at this, and the main takeaway I had for the Matt Eberflus hire was Osa Odighizuwa's got to stay. But I mean, because his contract is up, he's a pending free agent, and he's been productive in Dallas under two different schemes, and I think this might be the best fit that he's had. I mean, he worked really well in Dan Quinn's defense. He worked really well in Mike Zimmer's defense. He is like the ideal. Like if Matt Eberflus sat down and, you know, if you had like a sketch artist and he was like sketching out the description of the ideal three tech, it would be Osa Odighizuwa. So I think I feel like Matt Eberflus is going in there and getting on his hands and knees and begging Jerry Jones and Will McClay, like, please, 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 please bring me back Osa Odighizuwa. I got to coach this guy. It'll unlock the rest of the defense. And if they do, watch out.
Here's the other thing, too. I got to add to that because, you know, obviously I want Osa back. And yeah, let's be honest, that I think that's one of the players that I feel like is most likely to come back. I just think it seems like he wants to be here. I mean, that's kind of what, you know, I've kind of gained, you know, just kind of gained the knowledge about that and just seeing how he carries himself. Like, he wants to be a Cowboy. And, you know, to that point, like, you know, going back to Rod Marinelli, it's like back when he was, you know, when he was running things on defense, like that attacking style, there's some players on this team that are, you know, that fit it really well. And we may not have them back, like a Donovan Wilson, you know, a Malik Hooker, who also was with the Colts as well under Eberflus. Briefly. You know, so I mean, there was, they crossed paths. I mean, maybe Malik Hooker's, because there's been a lot of talk of the safety position because of how much money that safety room is right now between Donovan Wilson and Malik Hooker. But maybe Malik Hooker, for example, comes back because of the Eberflus, you know, situation. I mean, that's possible. We'll have to wait and see how that works. But I'm also curious to see if they're going to go after another defensive tackle in the draft, maybe in the first or second round. I can't think of the kid's name off the top of my head because I'm just thinking about it. But there's a kid from Ole Miss that's a really good interior defensive lineman.
Walter, I think Nolan. He's going
– Nolan, thank you. Yes, Nolan. I watched a lot of his games this year because I was watching Jackson Dart, and I like Jackson Dart as a quarterback prospect. So I was watching some Ole Miss games, watched a lot of SEC football, and Nolan just kind of stood out to me. I think he's going like late first, early second is kind of what I'm seeing these days, but at least what I've been hearing. And I think he'd be a kind of guy that you wouldn't mind having in there as well. So I'm curious to see if Matt Eberflus can get his way on a defensive player in the first day or two, because let's be honest, we're not keeping all these guys that are on the team right now. No. So we got to infuse it with some young drafted and undrafted talent that fit what Matt's looking for. And I'm kind of hesitant to see what they're going to do with Donovan Wilson and Malik Hooker, but the attacking style that Matt Eberflus, you know, that's what he wants. Those two guys are attacked. They're attack dogs, man. I wouldn't be surprised if they keep one of those guys. I don't think they keep them both. I feel like we're going to get, I wouldn't be surprised if they cut one of the two, but I'm wondering if Malik Hooker's job is, I guess, safer with the Cowboys than a Donovan Wilson, for example,
that's probably where I lean is because he has that experience with Eberflus. But I mean, you know, it'll be fascinating to see how those things, you know, change and evolve over time. With Nick Sorensen, though, obviously I think he only has the one season as an actual special teams coordinator. He's been an assistant special teams coach in the past with Seattle. I was looking through his profile, though. You mentioned his playing days. He has some interesting connections to this Cowboys staff currently. So when he was in St. Louis, as you mentioned, he was there for 2 years. He played alongside a defensive lineman by the name of Jeff Zganina, who's the current defensive line coach in Dallas, just finished up his first year. Of course, his contract is up like everyone. But there's been some whispers out there that maybe they look to retain Jeff Zganina. He didn't have any prior ties to Mike Zimmer coming in, so it's not necessarily like he's a Zimmer guy. There's already that connection. Fun fact, too, about Sorensen, back in his college playing days, he originally committed to Virginia Tech as a quarterback and played around the same time that Brian Schottenheimer was a backup quarterback at University of Florida. He was competing, went back and forth as the starter through the 98 season, I think, Sorensen did. And then the next year, he was permanently put at backup quarterback because Virginia Tech got a true freshman by the name of Michael Vick.
Let me pause it there. I got to apologize to Nick Sorensen because Michael Vick was actually at one point going to come to Syracuse. Like, that's a fact. You can look it up. That's a fact. But Donovan McNabb was here, and Michael Vick did not want to sit behind anybody, and that's why he went to Virginia Tech. That is a known fact here in the Syracuse area. So Nick, sorry that you had to sit behind Mike Vick, but yeah, that's the way it goes sometimes. And
yeah,
you know, well, it all it turns out the way it does.
it worked out for Nick though, because when Michael Vick came in and took over the starting role, that's when Nick Sorensen moved to, I think he played linebacker in college. At the NFL level, they put him at safety, but he was kind of, you're really just a special teamer. And at the end of his career, he played on the Cleveland Browns. And his last 2 years in Cleveland, his defensive coordinator was Rob Ryan. His linebackers coach, of course, he didn't play linebacker, but his linebackers coach was Matt Eberflus. And his head coach at that time was Eric Mangini, who, of course, was the first head coach to hire Brian Schottenheimer as his offensive coordinator with the Jets. So a few interesting connections there. And then, of course, Sorensen coached on the Seahawks while Shoddy was there. They have that connection. They coached together at Jacksonville. He was in Seattle at the same time that John Fossil was in the division coaching with the Rams for a very long time. So he's seen up close the guy that he's replacing. And John Fossil, of course, is respected as one of the top special teams coordinators in the NFL. He knows exactly what kind of guy he's replacing. He knows the coach that he's working under in Brian Schottenheimer. I'm excited to see what he's able to do with the special teams unit, especially since he inherits a great kicker in Brandon Aubrey. But Brian Anger's contract is up. Kevontae Turpin's contract is also up, though he's a restricted free agent. So it gets a little, iffy on how much freedom he actually has to explore the market. But there's some questions here. CJ Goodwin, I think his contract is up after every single year. But I'm excited to see him put his stamp on this special teams unit. As you mentioned, though, the offensive coordinator role does remain vacant. It's not as important as the defensive coordinator special teams coordinator job because Brian Schottenheimer will be calling the plays. But a non-play calling offensive coordinator, as Brian Schottenheimer knows, is still important. Yes. It's somebody who helps you to set the table. They help to game plan. They help to, install that game plan on a weekly basis with the players while Brian Schottenheimer's off doing head coach duties, and then frees him up for actually play calling on Sundays and helps him with preparing what his next play call is going to be, things like that. You mentioned before the show, you've got a couple of names that you would like to see in this offensive coordinator role. You already hinted you want somebody with head coaching experience. I think I have a feeling on what one of the names is, but why don't you go ahead and give us your ideas? All right, in case Brian Schottenheimer's listening.
Yeah. In case he's listening, he should be, because we give out good advice here on the on the writer's block. I mentioned it last week on the show. I mentioned it when we had Jess on. Anthony Lynn. I mean, it makes too much sense. I mean, the Commanders, they did a heck of a job with the run game. And I think, he was a catalyst behind that. Had coaching experience. Like, he's been around the league. He's well respected. That would be a really good hire. Now, there's another name out there that hasn't been, they haven't crossed paths with the Cowboys per se, but they have crossed paths with another team in Texas known as the Houston Texans. That's an afterthought team in Texas, let's be honest. But Jeff Nixon, Syracuse Orange offensive coordinator, they've had some conversations with him, the Houston Texans, and you can't blame the NFL for checking in, because look what Kyle McCord and that wonderful Syracuse offense did last year. And here's the thing, Jeff Nixon, he coached a guy by the name of Saquon Barkley. So he knows a thing or two about coaching up some players and seeing what he did with the Syracuse Orange. I don't know if he's going to get the Texans, OC position, but just to see him out there tied with the NFL, that gives me some pause. I don't want him to leave as a Syracuse fan. Like, I want Jeff back, back on the offensive coordinator throne here in Syracuse, but that would be an interesting name. Another name that also interviewed for the Houston Texans OC job, somebody who I don't know if you remember this, but he started, I think, 5-6 games, maybe like 10 years ago, for the Buffalo Bills. Thad Lewis. Thad Lewis is a hot commodity right now. He's a QB coach down in Tampa, and he's been, there's been some reports out there that multiple teams, Dallas. I haven't heard Dallas's name tied to him. Again, these names that I've mentioned have not been tied to Dallas in any way, shape, or form, at least to my knowledge. But Thad Lewis is another hot name out there. That could be, could be somebody that, could be brought in, could be perfect for him too, because maybe you don't want to bring him from a QB coach right to the OC per se, because Shadi's calling the plays. It might be a good way to, kind of bring him up to the next level, so to speak, and kind of groom him, so to speak, and watch what Shadi does and how he calls a game and things like that. That could also be a good thing, because you don't necessarily need a guy with offensive coordinating experience. If there's a QB coach out there that's halfway decent, and Thad Lewis, look what's going on with the Buccaneers with Baker Mayfield. Obviously, there's been some work there. He could be a perfect coach where, Shadi takes him under his wing. The guy played in the league. He was actually very entertaining. I think he played 5 or 6 games with the Bills. There was another game, I want to say with the Browns, but I might be mistaken. I know he played for the Bills for a hot second. And he was very – every game that he played in that I remember, he made it entertaining. I'll say that. He was a very entertaining guy. So Thad Lewis is another guy. And then I don't think this happens. Again, another Houston Texans tie. I know this is one of your guys. Bobby Slowick, I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't see that happening. But, I mean, what he's done in the past, he's still relatively young. I mean, he's only a couple years older than me, so he's not old. So let's not go down that rabbit hole. But no, but in all honesty, I think he's one of those guys where, and there's been some reports out there, believe it or, believe whatever you want. There were some issues with him and Stroud, that's kind of circling the rumor mill these days. Take that for whatever you want on that. Bobby Slowick's going to get another job elsewhere. He's still well thought of. So maybe they kick the tires on him. Maybe they don't. But those are some of the names that, that interest me. And I'll be honest with you, I honestly forgot Brian Griese left broadcasting to go coach. So Brian Griese,
San Fran.
I mean, why not? I mean, Brian Greasy's got, his father Bob Griese was a hell of a player back in the day as well. So the Griese name is also another football family. That's another thing. So that could be interesting where you bring in some more football.
We just had Mike McCarthy and Mike Zimmer. You can't then go to Brian and Brian. So I think we got to rule that one out right there.
Hey, Brian. But I mean, Brian. Is, point, Brian though, I mean, hold on. The name Brian's not bad. It's close to Brandon, so it's like a cousin of Brandon.
Yeah, it's close. It's okay. It's not the real deal.
Now of those names, is there anyone that you like there, or is there some other names that you'd like to see?
I'm intrigued about Bobby Slowick for a few reasons. One, if he comes in as offensive coordinator, obviously he's not calling plays. I'm excited about that just because he does come from that Shanahan tree. And so it sounds like Schottenheimer wants to bring some of that in. So getting a guy who actually has been in that system would be helpful. I think, a year ago, he was like the next big head coaching candidate name. I was never really that impressed with his play calling. It's obviously still the same Shanahan offense. I thought that he was not doing CJ Stroud a whole lot of favors. And then this year we saw a sharp regression for CJ Stroud, and they ended up making the move to part ways with him. So I think I'd really like to see him in a non-play calling offensive coordinator role to be able to provide that 49ers kind of structure and be a guy to bounce ideas off of. But also, like Brian Schottenheimer, he's the son of a coach too. His dad, Bob Slowick, is a longtime DBs coach in the NFL. So they probably have some similarities, some similar upbringing as far as that goes. For the record, I think he probably goes back to San Francisco in some way or another and waits until he gets an offensive coordinator job somewhere else. Jeff Nixon, I wouldn't hate it. He has some experience, not a whole lot at calling plays, but again, you're not bringing him in to call plays.
Let me stop you there, though. Let me stop you there because, the local beat here in Syracuse, his daughter just transferred into Syracuse from another school. So, I don't know. I feel like it would take a lot, and I'm just saying, I'm kind of also being hopeful, too, that he doesn't leave. But, if your kid is transferring to the school that you're working at, I don't know, necessarily – Yeah, I think he. I don't think.
Especially
he,
not
I don't,
to go I think, all the way down to Dallas.
That's the thing. And his son has one more year. Will Nixon, one of our running backs. Jeff's son Will. He's going to be here for another year as well. So to me, I think I think Jeff's just kind of keeping himself sharp on the interview circuit. So I don't buy that he's leaving because he's still out in the recruiting trail for Syracuse, but he would be a great get for Dallas. And he also has ties to Baylor, which is another school that I follow as well. Mm-hmm. So like I'm a big fan of Jeff Nixon. I think that's a guy that could be an offensive coordinator again in the league someday. But selfishly, I want him in Syracuse for as long as possible.
Yeah.
But that's just that. But you know, we were talking about it off air. That's just one of the names. I really like Thad Lewis. I think Thad Lewis could. I don't know if he's ready yet because I know he's still newer to the coaching realm. But that could be a guy you could groom. Like I think he could be another when Byron Leftwich was like the next big thing. Like he could be something maybe along those lines, so to speak. Yeah. And that's not a bad thing.
Honestly, it could be Byron Leftwich too. He's looking to get back into it. He might go that route. Probably not. I really like Anthony Lynn as a potential guy as well. He also has experience with Brian Schottenheimer. They coached alongside each other with the Jets. Like we talked about last week, he's also from Texas. I think in a lot of ways it would make sense. Now that the Commanders are out of the playoffs, they can interview him. We'll see if it actually happens.
Who do you want though? Who's the number one guy?
I mean, I really don't care at this point for the offensive coordinator because they're not calling plays. They're not like in charge of the offense. So it's still important, but it's not gonna make or break the offense in my view. That said, of the names that we've heard that have been kind of associated with it, it was reported that they requested to interview current Falcons tight ends coach Kevin Coger. I know Kevin Coger has been prior to this year, he was the tight ends coach with the Chargers. There's been a lot of buzz about him as a rising star. I think he would be really good. There's been a lot of buzz around Cardinals offensive line coach Clayton Adams, who actually I have a bone to pick with because this guy, he was the assistant offensive line coach for the Colts under Frank Reich.
Yeah.
And he gets hired to be the offensive line coach at Arizona State in the Herm Edwards era.
I knew that was going to go there. I knew
we introduced him. You know, he did like a media availability thing, did out the whole press release and everything. 2 weeks later, the Colts offensive line coach like gets hired away somewhere else, and then they hire him back to be offensive line coach. Tight ends coach. It was as tight ends coach. So he was at ASU for like 2 weeks, and then he was like, all right, no, I'm going back to the NFL. And then he recently, I forget which team it was, but he took another job somewhere else and then left for another NFL gig. And now he's coaching the Cardinals in Arizona. So he still ended up in Arizona at some point. But in all seriousness, Clayton Adams, the work he's done with that Cardinals offensive line is really impressive. The Cardinals offense this past year was really good. You look at the numbers, you look at the efficiency that they had, especially in their run game. That offense played well enough for the Cardinals to be in the playoffs. Their defense was just atrocious. So I wouldn't hate that, especially for what he brings in terms of creativity with the run game. The offensive coordinator there, Drew Petzing, has been a longtime disciple of Kevin Stefanski, the Browns head coach, who himself comes from mentoring under Gary Kubiak and one of the creators of the Shanahan offense. So by several different branches of offensive coaching, he comes from that Shanahan style of offense a little bit too. So I'd be fully on board with that. If I were the guy, if I were Brian Schottenheimer and I'm lining up interviews, one guy that I want to talk to though is going to be Lunda Wells, the current tight ends coach in Dallas.
Yes.
Who also, his contract is expiring. I believe Calvin Watkins reported on Tuesday that they're hopeful to retain him in some capacity. I've also heard buzz about they might move him to coach offensive line. Dan Quinn tried to get him as his offensive line coach in Washington last year, and the Cowboys blocked the interview request. They really like him. Lunda Wells has done some really good work with the tight ends. They've been a big part of the run game the last few years anyway. I think he's a rising star as well. So I would be curious to see, what he feels he can contribute to the offense if he were to be in a coordinator role. But again, I mean, this is really going to be about finding somebody that Brian Schottenheimer can lean on. So if he wants to leverage his relationships, and it's really going to be about who he trusts, who he feels comfortable with. So pretty much anybody he hires, I'm going to be okay with.
Yeah,
I can't think, unless he brings in Urban Meyer, because he does have a connection technically to Urban Meyer. That's probably the only guy that I would actually object to, but I don't think that's going to happen.
That's not happening. Urban's got a cushy broadcasting job. I don't think he's coming back to coaching.
Yeah. Speaking of Ohio State coaches and the Texans job, though, the other name that has been associated with the Texans offensive coordinator role is Chip Kelly, current Ohio State offensive coordinator. And I don't know if, you know, all the buzz seems to suggest that he's their top candidate, which is very interesting. You know, would be curious to see how that works out. You know, Cowboys fans fondly remember his time as the Eagles head coach and GM back in the day. Kind of wish he was still running that team with how much success they've had. And turning our attention real quick to around the NFL, of course, the Dallas Cowboys were the last team, or the second to last team, to fill a head coach opening, with the Jaguars stealing Liam Cohen away from the Buccaneers in under the cover of night, and lots of treachery. Then elsewhere, the Raiders announced Pete Carroll is their head coach at soon to be 74 years old. That'll be really interesting to see. Aaron Glenn was officially introduced as the Jets head coach. So there's only one job left now, and it's the Saints job. And by all reports, the final two candidates for that job are Mike McCarthy and Kellen Moore. With the Eagles now on a bye before the Super Bowl, they were able to conduct an in-person interview with Kellen Moore, I believe on Tuesday is when that took place. And then Mike McCarthy's coming in later this week for an interview with New Orleans. And, you know, as a Cowboys fan, like looking at this and seeing once again Mike McCarthy and Kellen Moore competing against one another, it feels funny. It feels like, you know, I don't know if the Cowboys are going to do anything under Brian Schottenheimer this year, but I'm sitting back right now with a big bag of popcorn and watching, curious to see who's going to win in round two between Mike McCarthy and Kellen Moore. It sounds like McCarthy might be the favorite. He has a longstanding relationship with the GM. He has history, has coached in New Orleans before. But I just think it's hilarious that this last job has come down to these two guys duking it out for the one last head coaching job of the cycle.
Yeah, it is interesting. And I don't think Kellen Moore gets this job. I think he misses out again on another head coaching cycle, so to speak. I think the Saints are going to go with Mike McCarthy. I feel like that was the obvious choice, you know, from the beginning. Mm-hmm. I feel like I just think, you know, his history, just being a hell of a coach, obviously things worked out the way they did with the Cowboys recently. Jerry Jones still, you know, Jerry Jones and, you know, the Jones family still spoke very highly of him at the press conference. So, you know, he's still well regarded. It just things didn't work out. And let's be honest, Mike McCarthy probably just wanted to change the scenery and he had to get away from the Joneses, I think, because, you know, I don't know if they're, you know, it takes a certain person to be a head coach for the Dallas Cowboys and the Jones family. So, you know, I think the Saints are going to go with McCarthy. I'd be very surprised if they didn't. I think Kellen Moore, he's probably going to miss out on this cycle, but I think he comes back around as a head coach as long as things don't drastically change in Philly, you know, between now and this time next year.
Which I think they have a history of Philly.
It's true. No, they do. They do have a history of it. And you know, I think Kellen Moore eventually will get a head coaching job. It's not a matter of if, it's more when, I feel like, with Kellen. But I think the Saints really need a guy who's been a proven commodity. I feel like, you know, I feel like Mike McCarthy is a great fit. If I was a Saints fan, I'd be happy about it, because let's be honest, we were talking a few weeks ago, we wanted to keep Mike McCarthy. So here in Dallas. So if the Saints can get a guy that's talented and you know, he's fresh, you know, he's moving from, you know, Dallas to New Orleans. I mean, it's not a bad move. I mean, I think there's some pieces there. I think McCarthy and Kamara and Olave, you know, just the names, you know, some of the names there. I think it could be. I think that appeals to McCarthy a little bit.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of potential offensive fireworks there, especially with Chris Olave, Rashid Shaheed. Definitely some potential there. It's funny though, like if Kellen Moore does miss out on a job this cycle, because so much of this conversation around Brian Schottenheimer was, well, if this guy is so good, why? How come he's been an offensive coordinator only all these years? How come nobody hired him? Why don't we just go with Kellen Moore? Well, I mean, from the moment that he became the offensive coordinator in 2019, he's been interviewing for head coaching jobs. And so now you're going on, I think, 6 cycles now where he's interviewed and not gotten a job. And it's like, now he's like becoming the next Brian Schottenheimer. He's also a coach's son, even though his dad was a high school coach, not an NFL coach. But like, you know, this is a guy who grew up always knowing he's going to be a coach. And now he's just been a career offensive coordinator. Brian Schottenheimer territory.
I don't know if it's going to get that far. I feel like
no, it won't. Like it won't go 25 years. But
no, I wouldn't be surprised. And like I said, I think by as long as things don't regress like drastically with Jalen Hurts and that offense for Philly next year, I think he gets a job next year. I don't think he's going to get this New Orleans Saints job. I feel like the Saints are going to go with the proven known commodity, which is Mike McCarthy. If I was in the Saints shoes, I would take Mike McCarthy in a heartbeat right now.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, a lot of people are dogging the Saints as a job profile because their salary cap is miserable right now, but they do have pieces like you talked about. And that division is kind of sort of open. I mean, the Buccaneers have won it 3 straight years, but they haven't like resoundingly won it 3 straight years. The Falcons are transitioning to Michael Penix. Yeah. Panthers showed some capability with Bryce Young, but like they're still probably a year away. I mean, it's very possible that Mike McCarthy in New Orleans next year ends up with a better record than the Cowboys next year.
Don't put that out there. Let's not do that.
I'm just saying if he takes the Saints job and he ends up, you know, taking them to even a conference championship game before the Cowboys do, as much as I'm rooting for Brian Schottenheimer, that would be hilarious for Jerry Jones. After, you know, the story of this year with Washington and Philly being in the conference championship game, and now the Cowboys have the longest conference championship game drought, and then for Mike McCarthy to leave and, like, immediately get there would be hilarious, would be great for, you know, just – making it very clear what the real problem in Dallas is, which that's a really, you know, somber note to end the show on.
But very somber, dude.
But that's what it is. I mean, we're all rooting for Brian Schottenheimer. We're ready to begin the Shoddy era. His first 2 hires, I think, are pretty good. Welcome back, Matt Eberflus. And you know, we're going to see how the rest of his staff fills out. We've also got the Senior Bowl this week, so we're really getting into the thick of draft season. And
if I could say one thing really quick to Schottenheimer, I know he's listening. Draft somebody from Syracuse. That's all I can say.
I mean, you got what, 2 options?
No, we got about 5 or 6 that are pretty darn good that are draftable players. Hey, and here's the thing. Real quick, Kyle McCord getting first round buzz from different reports out there. I'm not saying I'm not trying to say Dallas needs to get him at 12. I'm not saying that, but there are a few options out there, like Jackson Meeks, who's I believe it's his uncle is the Darius Smith who plays in the NFL. So there's some athletic family ties there. Great receiver. He's been putting on a show in the practices. Put on a show for the Syracuse Orange this year. He hasn't gotten the buzz that he should be getting. So maybe he's a sleeper day 3 receiver that we could take.
You know, I did a mock draft for the Cowboys on Monday right after the Schottenheimer press conference. And I did draft a Syracuse guy, your edge rusher, Fadil Diggs.
Good pick.
So there's that. And of course, starting next week and then, you know, all the way through April, we'll be talking draft and obviously also coaching staff as Shoddy fills out his coaching staff. So be sure to tune in next week for us breaking all of that down every week here at the Writer's Block, as we always do. For Brandon Clements, I'm David Hellman signing off. Remember always, how about them Cowboys?